Faith Middleton, and this show is about the richness of life. Thanks for listening in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. We start with entertainment news, and this is posted now at WNPR.org. Search programs for the Faith Middleton Show. New Jersey has Jersey Shore, and now Connecticut's Coast has its own controversial reality TV series in the works. For weeks, rumors have circulated around the village of Stony Creek about a top-secret project on Belden Island. This is one of 300 islands that make up the rocky grouping known commonly as the Thimbles off the coast of Stony Creek. We've learned what that hush-hush project appears to be about. We didn't learn it from the boat captains who ferry islanders and visitors around the Thimbles. They have refused to talk and have supposedly signed confidentiality agreements. They've been busy, though, hauling equipment to the island, including film cameras, large outdoor privacy screening panels, generators, fuel, cables, and more. There is one lifelong Stony Creek resident who has been keeping a watchful eye on the island shipments and activity, Dick Howd, a sport fisherman around the Thimbles and former ferry boat captain.
I was in my boat the other day going by Belden's Island and noticed a flag flying on a pole that said Love Prison. So I went home and I Googled Love Prison to see what was going on out there.
Now, you were curious about what's going on out there because there's been a kind of rumor going around that, you know, locals can't confirm.
Exactly. Everybody is wondering what's going on. There's cameras all over the place at the town dock.
Why couldn't you find out the way everybody does in Stony Creek about what's going on the islands from the boat captains?
Because they all had to sign a non-disclosure waiver.
Meaning what?
Meaning they couldn't repeat anything to anyone of what they had seen going on the island.
Did you see or did any of the boat captains mention that they saw special privacy screening there?
Oh, yes, yes. There's private screens mounted on the island. They took them out there and they built them, I guess, so that when you drive by with the boat, you can't see anything that's going on.
Did equipment go out there?
A lot of equipment, a lot of cameras, a lot of generators.
How big were the generators?
Oh, huge generators. Huge generators. A lot of fuel oil to run the generators.
And is there security out there?
Yes, 24/7 there's security out there.
Is there any word on how long they're going to be filming?
They said until middle of August.
And who owns Belden Island?
Christine Svennington owns it.
Okay, and it's up for sale at the moment?
Correct.
Thanks to you, Dick. We now know on this show what's going on out there on Belden Island in the Thimbles.
Yes.
Thank you for being our correspondent, Dick Howd. In a release this week, A&E gave a bare-bones description of a new reality show series, Love Prison, that it intends to air in 10 half-hour episodes in August. A&E said, and I'm quoting their release, "One in three relationships begin online, with many people not meeting for months or even years. But are these relationships real? In this unique social experiment, online couples meet for the first time on a remote island. Love Prison is a lone cabin rigged with fixed cameras. There are no visible producers, no visible cameramen, and no escape. Cameras capture the couple for a week with an all-access look at everything from their first kiss to their first fight. Each couple spend their week together determining whether or not the person they know online matches up with reality and if they want to continue their relationship or move on. At the end of the experiment, the new couple has a decision to make. Will they leave the love prison together or call it quits? Contacted by us, A&E says it prefers not to comment about whom they selected and how until the series begins airing in August. The series is produced by A&E by Left Field Pictures, whose executive producers are listed as Brent Montgomery, David George, Georgiana Hochschman, and Will Knockatcher. Left Field Pictures has produced a variety of reality series, including Pawn Stars, Pornography, pawnography, I should say, The Governor's Wife and Blood, Sweat, and Heels. The Connecticut Film Commission could not be reached for comment, and it should be noted that there are other Thimble Island homes to rent for those who meet online and prefer to skip a first dinner date and proceed directly to moving in together. Okay, a new reality series being filmed now off the coast of Stony Creek, Connecticut. And we turn now to our call-in show on animal care and choosing a dog or a cat that will have the best result for you and the animal that you are a guardian of. And we have as our guests our senior correspondents, we call them, Dr. Todd Friedland, our vet on the show, who is retiring this Friday after how many years?
42 years as a veterinarian, 36 years in Connecticut.
Congratulations to you. And Dr. Nancy Horn, who's a New Haven psychologist, has been on the show for decades and is not retiring for one second, and I hope she never does. Welcome to the show, both of you.
Hi.
Okay, so we're going to talk about several things. Another online controversy about ice water and dogs. We're going to talk about Rocky Mountain spotted fever. This is of concern to dog owners. And how to pick pets, the kinds of things, Nancy Horn, that you see in therapy with people, including a shame that you said people feel about how in love they are with their animals.
Yes.
So we're going to get to all of this. I think we should start with Rocky Mountain spotted fever, Todd Friedland.
Okay. The big picture is that we have a lot of ticks in Connecticut, and there are many tick born diseases. That would be a disease that you would get from a tick bite. And just last week or the week before, it was recognized that a tick-borne disease that we really haven't seen in Connecticut, at least reported, Rocky Mountain spotted fever, has now come to Connecticut. Whether that's from dogs traveling or people, who knows? We don't know, but it's here. The significant, and it looks on TV and online, it says fatal disease. It really is. It's a serious tick-borne disease. Dogs don't drop dead from it. We don't have to worry about it. The big factor here is that the routine testing that veterinarians do in the office do not test for this disease. So your veterinarian could, for a short time anyway, be fooled in that this is something else because the standard tick tests are coming up negative. It would require sending a sample out to the lab.
And do the symptoms look the same?
It's the achiness and the fever and just like people get. But it can get quite serious if left untreated, and that's what the big brouhaha is all about, is that it's a little bit more, the symptoms are a little bit more serious and than the typical tick-borne disease. But initially, your dog doesn't feel good, you go to the doctor, fever, and hopefully your doctor will suspect perhaps tick-borne disease. The nice thing is that all these tick-borne diseases respond to the same medicine.
You know,
that's the nice thing.
You know what's so interesting to me about this is that in the tropics, there's a mosquito that causes chikungunya disease,
right.
And it is very, very serious. In the elderly, it can cause death, and it's sort of like malaria. And it's, you know, it's in the Caribbean and it's in certain other countries. And now because of the Brazil World Cup matches, they've seen now three cases of chikungunya in Connecticut. And people are worried that these mosquitoes are going to be carried now to the U.S. I don't know why on the planes or in people's purses. I mean, I don't know. But I'm thinking this to me, it cracks me up because in the summer, there is nothing like a shark story. There's nothing like a scary mosquito story. And so we're going to see a lot of this.
The thing is, when I went to school, you learned about endemic diseases. This disease is present in the Midwest, and this disease is present in the West. But we didn't travel that much 40 years ago. Now, these things, they do spread. I mean, they go nuts. They do spread. Yeah. But if it hits the internet, our favorite word, then it becomes often gets blown out of proportion. This is not really, this was blown out of proportion because your dog isn't going to drop dead. My only tip to people is don't take chances with generic products right now with this new disease because people get it too. So just use the brand name products. I'm not going to mention them, but just talk to your veterinarian about what the best thing is to use.
Okay.
That's all.
Scary.
And I was going to say,
that's why people get upset because it's like,
sure.
Some of it sounds scary.
Yeah, great white sharks, chikungunya, and now.
But we can top it with ice water. I mean, we can top this story with a story about ice water.
That's dangerous.
No way.
I try and stay away from
unless you're a football
coach.
I'm terrified
already. Yeah. We need that music. But before we get to that, could you just tell me about, is it true, Nancy, I don't know if you've heard about this, coy dogs were coyotes and regular, is this an urban myth?
You mean that they're out there now?
That coyotes are mating with human dogs.
Okay,
human dogs.
The last I heard.
With regular dogs.
The last I heard was that this was a myth. Oh. And that's all within the last month or two that this
really?
Is a myth.
The only people have said right to me.
Oh, yeah.
I've seen them.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But the only ones that I know that existed, and I don't think they exist anymore, were at UConn. They were breeding some coy dogs to do some work with healing or something. Okay. I don't remember. But that was 25 years ago. But this whole rumor came out. We got a notification. No, there's no proof. This is just – so that's what we know.
Why wouldn't it happen? The coyotes are acting so tame.
I think
it was
people
one
would do
just
on
the
purpose.
Other day that was out there yeah. on a field.
Yeah, I think people would do it on purpose. I don't think too many dogs. I mean, I just don't know.
Yeah, I agree. Why wouldn't they?
Well, I think coyotes want to stick around with coyotes, and dogs typically stay away. And coyotes prey on dogs.
But what about the mountain lions mating with the other animal?
Bobcats.
I forget what the name is, but that's supposedly moving from the west toward the east.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm
waiting for Bigfoot, and then we'll go from there.
Okay. Before we get to the psychology of animals, and we're going to open the phones for your calls and comments, there's a thing going around online right now about ice water, and I guess it went viral. And Todd was telling Nancy and telling me that the rumor online was that this had either killed a dog or made the dog so sick. And so what's the story?
Very
is ice
briefly,
water dangerous?
No. I will tell you, ice water can give your dog a headache, we think, because we do think that when dogs get headaches, they press their head against the wall, and so you get the brain freeze like they're eating the whole scoop of ice cream. But I will tell you that in the early 60s, we learned that when dogs had an upset stomach, you put a little ice in a bowl and you put a little bit of water, and that way they can't take a huge volume of water, and they lick the ice cubes and they have ice water. And this has been going on forever. But somebody fed their dog a bowl of ice water recently, and the next day the dog developed what's called a bloat, a twisted stomach, and the dog died. And then there was an automatic, totally scientific cause and effect. My dog drank ice water yesterday, so today's disease must have been caused by yesterday's ice water. They went online with it, viral, and it's everywhere now. So you can go ahead and put ice cubes in your water. Just call me if there's a problem with that. But there is no problem with putting ice cubes in water, and on a hot day, it's a good thing.
This is breaking news
is
all
breaking
over
news.
This show today. It's just unbelievable.
You have to be careful.
It's like 60 minutes today. All right, so we're with Dr. Nancy Horn, psychologist in New Haven, and also Dr. Todd Friedland, our vet on the air. Nancy is our psychologist on the air, and they're coming right back. We're going to take your calls, and we're going to talk about the psychology of why we love cats and dogs as much as we do, what they give us, and also how to select a match, how to make that match. So stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm Faith Mills. You can find what we talk about on the show online anytime at WNPR.org. And right now you can also see delicious, easy recipes for dinner, lunch, value wine, and cocktails, and much more. Click on foodschmooze.org or just plug in foodschmooze.org or go to the Faith Middleton Show. And you can do that by searching programs. Let me tell you why, because we have up there posted right now a picture of one of Todd Friedland's clients. This is a Chihuahua who has five names, but we know this Chihuahua as Baby Taco Chico. And the owner apparently dresses the dog in a different outfit every single day. And so Todd has given us a picture of the dog baby Taco Chico, who came, who was dressed for the beach that day. And so you can see this at our website right now. If you have some young people in the car, no matter what, you've got to see this. So it's at WNPR.org.
Excuse me, it was a beach day. We should tell people that
it was a beach day, to be fair, too. To the dog. All right, Dr. Nancy Horn, our psychologist in New Haven, our on-air psychologist for many, many years. I was fascinated when you said to me that people love their cats and dogs and birds and other things too. But they love their animals so much that they actually feel shame.
Yes, I think a lot of people are embarrassed by how much they love their pet, how much they need their pet, how much they spend on their pet. Now, if you have a friend that does the same thing, it's not so bad. But there are many people that have animals, and for example, the animal will die, and their grief is massive, and they really are a little bit ashamed of talking with people about how distraught they are over losing their pet.
And especially if they can't get over it in what's considered by somebody else a reasonable amount of time.
Like right away, for example, they think they should get over it pretty quickly, and it just doesn't happen. I mean, people have the same kind of grieving over a pet that they have over a loved one.
But even not dying, you know, there's the absolute devotion, love of that cat or dog. You're saying some people can feel ashamed. If to other people it registers as over the top somehow.
Yeah, sometimes they can, especially if they want to take their pet every place. There's some people that will disapprove of that, so they get uncomfortable about that. Certainly spending money. There's other people who say, oh, my gosh, you cannot spend $4,000 for hip replacement for your animal. There's shame around that kind of stuff. I think people, their attachments are great to pets. And, you know, we're in a culture where I think people tend to talk about whether or not they themselves are loved enough. And so we can say, oh, people are loved because their pets are loyal to them. That's why they get attached to their pets. I think an underrated need in our culture is for ourselves to be giving love to others. And that's what we do with our pets, because we take care of our pets. We give to them. We take care of their needs. We cuddle them. We give them care.
This brings up such an important point. I think you pointed this out to me once years ago on the show, where humans think that they're getting an animal to only be given love.
Right.
You know, that it will be, without admitting it, it's more of a one-way street. You said actually it's at least a two-way street, if not more in the other direction. That this is about the human giving love to the animal,
and we need it. We need to do that. We need to give love to others. And there's many people who prefer pets to humans. They prefer animals to humans, and so it's ideal for them because they don't like humans very much. They don't want to give that much to other humans. And so most of their giving and loving is with animals.
And I see that a lot with families who say these words, these pets are my kids. They have no kids. These pets are my kids. And they treat them like their children. But often in my office with the doors closed, they'll say, I hope nobody hears this, but, and then they'll go on to talk about some of the things that they do for their pets and that they don't share with other people because they're a little bit embarrassed.
Huh. And do you say something? I mean, what do you say?
Well, it's you know, everybody's different, but I'm trying to put myself in that place now. I don't really react. I mean, I'm not going to say you haven't had kids, so you don't know what it's like to have kids. I'm not going to say something like that. This is their life. These are where people are devoting their attention, and you know, my job is to obviously take care of the medical part. But if I can get, I'm a conversation person, so if I can get into a conversation and see if there's anything that any role that I can play, I'm happy to do it.
See, I've noticed that there's people who have a simpatico relationship with an animal, and it's not necessarily a certain breed or anything like that. It's a certain specific animal. I saw a dog in a pet store, and I had no intention whatsoever buying an animal. And I saw that dog, and I said to the person I was with, I have to buy the dog. Not then. We went home, and I said, I have to buy the dog. And it was crazy. I mean, it just had to happen. And it had to do with the eyes and this animal. And we were simpatico forever. And, you know, I had a baby, and the baby was fussing in the room, and I had shut the door to try and allow this baby to fuss a little tiny bit. My dog was frantic, coming to get me, hurting me to go over and deal with this baby and looking at me like, come on, you know, you can hear it. Let's go over there. I mean, she was...
So this dog did turn out to be a soulmate with you.
Oh, absolutely. And my best, and my very good friend, Ann Greenstone in Milford, has a dog. And that's a sort of a shepherd mixed breed that she got at the pound. And I am absolutely simpatico with that animal. I feel like that animal and I are just like everybody understands themselves.
Well, losing a pet is so traumatic for most of the people that I deal with that I often hear, at the time of euthanasia or the time of death, I'm never going to get another dog, or I'm never going to get another cat. And they're making this absolute statement because of this period of time of death and grieving.
My husband won't get another animal, and it's absolutely because his dog died.
A few months later, a few years later, they walk in with a new pet. And I don't say anything. I'm not going to say I told you so or anything like that. But they walk in and they go, I wasn't going to get another dog, but I saw this dog and exactly what Nancy just talked about. And this is what happened. And this dog is my soulmate now, or this cat. I mean, it is.
And those are different dogs. I mean, it's not like it's just any animal. I think there's.
Yeah, they just see this animal wherever they see it and they go, okay, I'm done.
Well, isn't this the same as people where... I think of children, you know, certain children where I just, there are certain ones, I mean, you think, oh, yes, these children are cute. Then there are these ones where you just take one look and you look at each other and there you go. That's all wrapped up in a nice little package.
I mean, call it spirit, call it soul. I don't know what you call it.
Well, it's just like instant falling in love.
And one could be embarrassed talking about it the way we are.
Yeah. I will tell you that in my office, I mean, I can't, you know, 30, 40 animals walk through that office every day. And there are 8, 10 animals in a cage every day. And I will walk through just kind of either on my way in the morning or to just kind of do a brief rounds. And all of a sudden, these two eyes get me. And that animal is in my arms going up to my desk to help me do paperwork. And there's something going on there with that animal.
You know, I was in the Animal Rescue Fund in East Hampton. And there was this cat in there. And I mean, how many years have gone by now? This is 4 years. I cannot get this cat out of my mind.
And how many cats have you seen since then?
Exactly.
Lots. Oh, I mean, like a million.
Yeah.
You know, and once I walked into a store, a furniture store, and there was the store owner's dog was lying on a rug, and it was a standard poodle, and it was white. And I'm telling you, I put one foot over the threshold. I looked down. It looked up at me. It stood up with this thing in its mouth, and it was like, well, here, you're home. Here we are. And if I could have, I mean, I felt a sense of panic, like how could I convince the owner that I needed to buy her own dog from her? I mean, is that crazy?
But I'm saying it sounds crazy, doesn't it?
Do you go and you see somebody with a pet and they'll say, and you'll go, and you'll do something, interact with that pet or not, and that pet will come to you and they'll say, that dog never does that with anybody.
Right.
So there is something, you know, we don't know what this is. I don't want to put a name on it, but there's definitely something out there.
Yeah. One of my dearest friends has a dog and she fell at one point and was injured. And twice now this has happened. This dog would inch by inch on the ground as she tried to make her way to safety. It wouldn't get up on all its legs. It would just inch on the ground, matching her. It wouldn't go ahead. It wouldn't wait behind. As she progressed, it progressed. I look in this dog's eyes and I think the eyes of the ancient ones are in this dog's face.
Yeah. Well, we've told a story.
Can't believe I sound like a nut, but I honestly,
we've told a story about my childhood dog who hung out with my mother when she had her migraine headaches. My father almost developed an inferiority complex because he would get hurt and injured. Dog didn't care, you know. But when my mom got sick, Boots was right on it.
Yeah.
What's that?
Yeah.
I don't know what that.
And how about? I mean, I'm a big rescue person, and I cannot believe, I swear to you, I know it. I'm anthropomorphizing, everyone would say it, but I swear to you these animals know that they have been rescued by this person. I've seen this too many times.
It's hard for me to comment on that because I want to say, as a scientist, absolutely not. I really want to say that, but I don't believe what I just said on the radio.
Yeah.
Because I hear it. I mean, the animals come in, obviously, into a house. They're disoriented. They've made, who knows what's going on behind them in their history. But very, very shortly, people will come in and they'll say, this dog is appreciating what I'm doing. Greyhounds are the biggies for us because they have no human contact before they get adopted out. Virtually none.
And cats do this, too.
It's pretty amazing.
They know. They know something.
Mm-hmm.
Even the cats that remain feral and just come to be fed, they allow that. They allow the feeding. They allow some kind of contact. They're saying, I know you're taking care of me. It's more than just you're my food source.
Don't know. It just happens every day.
I would never make you say that. Okay, Nancy Horn, let me come back to some of this psychology stuff. You once told me about picking out, you went to a shelter and you picked out a kitten for your daughter. And you did it based on what? What were you trying to do psychologically, find for her?
Well, we want super affectionate cats, which can be kind of a pain if you want to, be at your computer and not have a cat sitting on the keyboard, or if you want to read the New York Times and not have a cat in the middle of them. I mean, so some people don't want super affectionate cats, but we're into affectionate cats, ones that sort of are constantly all over you and trying to sit with you. So we are always on the lookout for it. So we want a cat that is going to be affectionate, that wants human company.
And so when you went in and you saw, and you have to choose among the cats, a very hard thing to do.
Well, I interviewed 10 cats.
Oh, you did?
How'd you do it? No, I would go meet them all. I would go interview all these 10 cats and interview them, spend some time with them and see how affectionate they were. It's hard when it's a little kitten because they could just be sort of in a playful period. But I've walked into somebody's house in New Britain. They had a bunch of Himalayas, and there were kittens. And those kittens were immediately all over me, like all of them. There was like 5 of them. And I walked in, sat on the floor. They were all constantly wanting to be petted and all over me. And that's a pretty dead giveaway if that's what they want the minute they see another human. And so I saw about 10 kittens before I got my – and I had some beautiful, beautiful kitten I wanted. It was so gorgeous, but that litter was just – it wasn't affectionate. And I had already promised my kids. I said, oh, this is finally it. I look like a wacko, right? Oh, this is finally it. I think we've got it. And so I go up to New Britain to try and get these kittens, and they're just not affectionate. And I remember standing in a phone booth in the rain on a Sunday night at 7 o'clock going through the ads again in the newspaper trying to find another kitten I could interview. And so I went – that was actually Windsor Locks. And so then I saw one in New Britain, and I went there at like 8 o'clock on a Sunday night, and the people let me in, and this kitten was absolutely affectionate.
Well, how do you – there's something that I try to explain where – there will be you go into a rescue center and there'll be dogs and cats, and they can present as quite shy. And for whatever reason, the person says, like I, for instance, live with a rescued dachshund who's blind. Okay, so in this animal rescued, and it is the most sweet, witty, wonderful, rosy, just fabulous dog. And so affectionate. You can go into these rescue centers and these dogs seem so gun-shy, or cats too. And then living with you,
they open up.
They transform. I think that is so amazing. Not everyone, but it's amazing.
But none of them in nature, I mean, these are animals, none of them in nature would ever live in an environment with all of that noise and disruption. So it could really upset them.
Where?
In the shelters. I mean, none of them would naturally live that way. So some of these animals, as you said, are really just step back. And they're just overwhelmed. And then they come home and they become the most amazing animals.
Yeah, they say, look at all this food. People are loving me.
Yeah. And so how does the person who's going through the shelter pick the one?
Yeah. What do you say, Nancy Horn?
I think you have to get the kitten alone in a little area and play with them for a while. Not play, but just like hang with them and see if they – watch what they do. I had somebody tell me that they were so astounded that their cat – sort of told them what they wanted and didn't want and had these kinds of, you know, characteristics. Well, yeah, watching, you get to find out sort of what's going on with the kitten.
You know, it's funny, this cat I can't get out of my mind, who's at this shelter at ARF, was a big black guy. I mean, huge, looked like a leopard. And surprisingly, because I'm into, you know, affection with animals, you know, I love to cuddle and snuggle up and all that, eye contact, the whole thing. This bruiser was kind of a fighter. You know, I mean, he had to have his own special area. But then he would have the run of the place at night after everybody goes home. He gets to walk around while all the other animals are in their cages. And he won't fight, but he's big. And so he needs to get out and get some exercise. And I can't get him out of my mind because I think, well, he's sort of my opposite in terms of, but I just love him to death. I mean, I can't stop thinking about him. Mm. Isn't that something?
I understand.
It'd be like living with a leopard. No, like a panther.
I have to put this into one show, though. There's no such thing as a spoiled pet. Only a well-trained owner. That's my motto.
Well, yeah. Tell me what you mean by that.
Well, the pet is trained. The pet,
that's right. I mean, you know, Nancy's saying, well, you know, the kitten tells you what it wants and what it doesn't want. You know, I mean, a lot of people would just, here's some food for the cat and the day's over with. But eventually, dogs more so, but eventually pets, you will change your behavior mm-hmm. much more than the cat will ever change
that's
its
right.
behavior.
I know that.
And so
story.
That is called, to me, being trained by your cat passively. I mean, the cat doesn't hold a treat and say, sit. But over time, you will be trained. When I adopted Pepper, an 11-year-old Shih Tzu, she's passed away last year, what I say to people is, I mean, it was one of the most fulfilling things I ever did in the pet world for me. But they said, well, what's it like adopting an 11-year-old dog? I said, as soon as we learned her lifestyle, our life was fine.
Right.
I just figured out what she does. She told me what she does day in, and I would say, you know, it's time to do this. And she'd be sitting on a couch saying, it's not my time to do that.
Wow. Okay. So we're going to continue talking with Todd Friedland, our vet, and our psychologist, Dr. Nancy Horn, here on the show. And also online, we have a picture of one of Todd's clients, Baby Taco Chico.
I have the other
who
names.
Who dresses every...
It's Lady Baby Taco Chico.
Lady Baby Taco Chico, who dresses, it's a chihuahua, and dresses up every day in a different outfit. Not dresses up, is dressed up every day in a different outfit. And you can see her beach outfit, or his beach outfit, online right now at WNPR.org. Click programs for the Faith Middleton Show. Also, we have a story posted up there about a new reality show that is being filmed in Connecticut. And we found out exactly what that is. People are being very secretive about this thing, but we found out what it is. So you can go online to see that, too. It's a pretty wild idea for a reality show. And we'll be right back. Tweet us at FaithWNPR or join the conversation with us on Facebook. Search The Faith Middleton Show. Thanks to you for listening and to our talented team, producers Lori Mack and Jonathan McNichol. My guests, our vet, Dr. Todd Friedland, is back. Our psychologist on this show, Dr. Nancy Horn in New Haven, is here with us. We're talking about the psychology of being the guardian of a cat or a dog or another kind of non-human animal, it's been fascinating so far, and we invite you to call in and make a comment or ask a question at 203-776-9677. Easy way to remember, 203-776-WNPR. Fred, welcome to the show.
Hi, Faith. Of course, I'm Fred from Milford.
Okay.
When I was growing up, my father grew up in the islands, and he would tell me that all pets have to be outside. They're filthy animals. they come in the home, it's hair, it smells. And that was more or less the mindset as I was growing up. But now as a man, I mean, to surprise to me, a gentleman is a trucker traveling from Florida, is delivering a small little pet for my niece. As soon as my niece sees the pet, she's frightened out of her skin. When I saw the pet, I said, wow, he's the most adorable thing I've ever seen.
Was it a snake?
And it was a chow lab dog mix. And as soon as we saw him, he said, wow, he looks like a little bear. Now he's a 106-pound bear.
Uh-huh. And so did you keep him, or did this...
No, she would not have it in the house.
Uh-huh.
So... And the mother said she was so frightened of the dog that she just ran to the room. And the trucker would say, look, I'm not taking this dog back. This is it. It's a done deal.
Hey, so, Fred, let me ask you, because we have been following these stories where rescue centers have been making deals with long-distance truckers to, you know, some shelters are overwhelmed. And so they will say, oh, let's say Connecticut will say, you know, we have some space. And so somebody in Tennessee will make a deal with some of the long-distance truckers and say, listen, are you passing through Connecticut? Will you take a dog or two and drop them off for us? And these truckers do it.
Exactly. And I was never aware of anything of that nature. This was the first time I ever heard of anything like that.
Yeah, isn't that great? Well, hey, Fred, thank you so much for calling.
Thank you, Fred.
Okay. Really appreciate
you,
it.
Faith, okay. I would say that Connecticut has passed some laws recently to try to make it more difficult to do that. But we have stories, we've talked about them on the show, where people sign up for a dog that's online, and when the truck comes and meets you in a parking lot north of Bradley Airport or whatever, wherever it is, and you get this dog, it's not the dog that was advertised. I mean, a lot of good stories as well, but there are a lot of bad stories. So it's $350, like a standard fee. The money's already, it's already gone.
So part of this is a racket, you're saying?
Oh, yeah.
You
There's
have to
no
watch
question
out.
All over the country. And there are people that are going around that are to the shelters, from our experience, in the Southeast. And they're getting dogs that were on, quote-unquote, death row. And some of these dogs are on death row because they're unadoptable. They have behavior problems. But they're being shipped up here and given, you know, sold to people sight unseen. So just... buyer beware. I mean, that applies to everything.
Yeah. You mean unadoptable by certain kinds of people, because there are people who can work with these dogs. You know, dogs who might, you know, snap or be grouchy or you know, have their behavioral issues. There are some people who can work with these animals.
But some of the, you know, for the common person that goes online on petfinder.com or whatever, they don't have any clue about what this is.
Yeah, so
you just have to be careful.
Yeah,
I'm not really big on buying dogs online, but it's easy.
You know, what surprises me though is that we are surrounded. If no matter where we are in our region, you know, four states here on the show, we're surrounded by shelters.
Absolutely.
And so you can go see these animals.
Let me tell you what I hear. I'm sitting home. We want a dog. It's 10 o'clock at night. I can go get it. I can get a dog online. In my pajamas. I spend more time buying a car than some people spend buying a dog. Car's going to last 5 years. Dog's going to last 15. But it's just, and it's impulsive for a lot of people, which Nancy can talk about.
Nicole Faith Middleton with Dr. Todd Friedland and Dr. Nancy Horn. Welcome to the show.
Hi, everybody. How are you?
We're great.
Great.
Thanks. Go ahead, Nicole.
My boyfriend and I had been together for a year, and we grew up with cats our whole lives, but we really wanted to take the time and make sure that not only were we ready to have, you know, a new addition to our family, but we got, you know, a pet that was, you know, from somewhere reputable. And we ended up adopting he's now 6 weeks or 7 weeks old kitten from the Vernon Bolton shelter. And when he was one of 10 and by himself in the cage, you know, just kind of staring at us, a little bit of curious. He's been home for almost a week now, and he is an incredible life. You would never have known that this much energy and personality come from this little kitten that looked like he was so timid. So, you know, I understand, you know, what you guys are saying about, you know, a cat or a dog, for that matter, can have an entirely different personality. But I think when it comes to adopting, either if you do it through Pet Finder or a shelter, I think a lot of parent or a lot of pet owners, they rush into it. and they don't realize that, you know, it's not as, you know, difficult as a kid, but there still is that responsibility. And I think that we hear a lot about pet owners that, you know, buy it for a birthday or Christmas, and they really jump into it before a family is ready, or, you know, before, you know, the owner themselves are ready for that type of responsibility.
Nicole, thank you so much for raising that topic, because and thanks for being on the show. Nicole has raised an issue that, to me, is one of the most heartbreaking things. I didn't know until I talked to the Animal Rescue Fund in East Hampton on the east end of Long Island that this goes on, that in vacation communities there are more families than you would think that go to a place and get an animal, a cat or a dog, for the summer vacation period.
Or the
and
school
then
year.
Just let them out the door and let them go, or worse, at the end of the vacation period. So, and the rescue centers are overwhelmed with animals in the fall. And I find this shocking, but I guess it goes on.
We recommend against it.
Absolutely.
We get a wave. One of our values.
Yeah, we get a wave in Wyndham in May. Kids going to college, three or four kids in an apartment. They want a cat. They want a dog. There is no thought about what am I going to do in May when the school year is over. They can buy this thing and the food with credit cards that are going back to mom and dad. And apartment owners who, let's say Nancy and I move out, our landlord goes in and finds two cats in the apartment.
Yeah.
Or dog.
Yeah, I took in a dog that was left at the Brantford Motel. And it had been left. I'd been there visiting, you know, saying goodbye to people that were staying there. I was there in the middle of the day, and the owner said, oh, this dog has been outside this room for hours. And I said, well, if the dog is still there at the end of the evening, call me. And the dog was still there at 9 o'clock at night and sitting there, I guess, waiting for its owner.
Oh.
And I took it in and paid. In those days, you had to pay to advertise that you'd found a dog and call all the vets and call all the shelter places. And no one claimed that dog. And I had a list. This is the best dog in the world. I had a list of 10 people that wanted that dog. Anyone who saw that dog wanted the dog. The dog was perfect.
Yeah. I have a friend who has rescued a dog, and there is a list about 100 miles long.
Yeah, and some of them are perfect.
I just want to say I am number one on that list.
And this dog had respect for cats and everything. It had every possible quality you could want.
Isn't that amazing? Jim, Faith Middleton and the gang, welcome to the show.
Yeah, hi.
Hi, Jim.
I actually have a rescue dog. I've had her probably about 7 years now. And it was kind of similar to the story you were just talking about. She kind of got dumped on a Labor Day weekend, ended up at a dog pound. And the animal control officer knew I was looking for a dog. And, you know, the first time I saw her, there was nobody there except for me and Madison. That's why I finally called her, was Madison. And it was like instant connection.
Now, Jim, had you ever had a dog before?
Oh, I've had a dog since the day I was born.
Okay, so you knew what to do. I think about people who don't know what to do. You know, they've never had a dog before, and this terrible situation is heartbreaking, and they say, I'm going to save you, dog or cat. And then it begins. You know, Todd Friedland, you see this all the time.
Oh, we sure do.
Wow, Jim. Hey, thank you for that story so much.
Yeah, and she's still with me. And
How old is she?
That's still the question.
Yeah.
They couldn't tell me at the time because she was like between 4 and 7 years old at the time.
And is she a mixed breed? What kind is she, you think?
And, yeah.
What kind?
What kind of dog?
Yeah, what kind? A whole bunch of breeds, do you think?
She's definitely a Heinz 57.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Mostly Black Lab, German Shepherd.
Yeah, so she's a good size. Wow. Okay. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Bye, Jim.
She's great, and you guys have got a great show here going. Thank you.
Oh, you're so welcome. I'm lucky to be with these two. Thank you. 203-776-9677 here on the Faith Middleton Show. So, Nancy Horn, what if you said you've heard from people in terms of psychology about a little bit of shame or a lot of shame that people can have because they either spent too much money or they feel that people are judging them because they love their animals too much. And Todd Friedland, you've said you've seen this too. Your clients have confessed that that's the case. We talked about pets dying and people are afraid they haven't recovered, you know, more quickly, and that people will judge them for that, which is shame that people would judge them. But what about you know, this idea of people who want to take their, just a family member, they want to take their dogs everywhere with them, but then you have really good friends who will say, no, I don't want a dog in my house. I'm worried about hair. I'm not talking about allergies, you know, things, but they have issues. And I think, does that get in the way of friendships?
Oh, absolutely. I've seen people who expect that they can take their dog to, let's say a relative's house that has animals, okay, who has animals. And they just think they should be able to do that without any kind of trouble. And so if somebody says, no, you know, please don't bring your cat, or could you please keep the cat in a room because our other cats are terribly upset, or the dog is trying to snap at the cat, they're just totally offended. So there's just sometimes there's no sensitivity to the fact that there's a problem having an animal come or mixing with an animal. On the other hand, people love their animals and want to be able to keep their animal with them. So it's got to be some kind of mutual working out.
Oh, this is an everyday occurrence. You know, to me personally, it's a little bit rude for me to bring my dog to your house without permission, or my cat. And I don't think with cats that the cats really want to go. Cats are very territorial. I don't think they want to go to somebody else's house. So I think they're best off left home or whatever other arrangements. But people do bring pets to people with pets or people without pets. A lot of people without pets don't want pets in their house. We don't have to get into the reasons. And they will, you know, they will, the pet owners will come to me and say, yeah, I went to visit my sister and I can't go see her anymore because she won't let my cat in the house. So don't you respect what your sister's wishes? But it happens. It's a very, very regular occurrence.
And there are people who are adults and children who are afraid.
Absolutely.
When even a loving animal, you know, who has no history of biting or snapping or doing anything wrong, are just afraid. And, you know, there's another situation where you kind of wish the pet owner had some, or guardian had some sensitivity about this. Mary Jane, we have about 45 seconds. Can you make a quick comment?
Yes. My father was followed home from World War II by a beautiful gray cat named G.I. Joe. He was in New Haven Station, and my mother picked him up, and the cat went home with us.
Oh,
I love it.
Yeah, that was
I love
fun.
It.
Oh, what a great thing.
So you've been, your father was adopted.
He was taken by the cat.
That's right.
Yep, and then the cat came home, so it was like the cat came home from World War II, and my dad came home from World War II.
And what was their relationship, your dad and the cat?
Well, they liked each other. We all loved him, and he was a cat that wouldn't even be mean to kids. I was bothering him, and he punched me, but only with a sheathed claw. And my parents
thank
were
you.
So happy, you know. That
yeah,
he was well
thank
trained.
You, Mary Jane. What a good story to end on.
Oh,
thank you, as always, to Dr. Nancy Horn, our New Haven psychologist, and Dr. Todd Friedland. Congratulations on your retirement from practice. That means we get to have you more.
Absolutely.
All right. As always, this show is about the richness of life. You can find the books, people, great recipes, and value wines, and some very interesting stories up there right now at WNPR.org. Click programs for the Faith Middleton Show. In New Haven, I'm Faith Middleton.